We play and call it work.
Hey everybody, Matthew here from IndieWarGaming.com, and welcome to this week's Sit and Talk. It's been a while since I've done one of these, because we kind of lapsed doing them, and I think mine got missed. Whatever. It's been a while, but I got a bunch of questions to answer. So this, of course, is a show where you just get to ask us anything, and we take turns being the ones to answer the questions. For example, next week is going to be Luca and Cullen. Now, it'll be Cullen's last Sit and Talk, because that'll actually be pretty much his last day of work. He was only here for the summer, because he's going back to school. So make sure you... leave him some questions for next week. You can leave those in the comments below. If you're watching this on YouTube, we disable comments on YouTube, and you need to go to our site to leave them, just because it's a lot easier for us to organize them. And then make sure that when you're there, you also thumb up any comments that you'd like to see, because I first look at the comments that are most thumbed up, and then I take random orders from the rest of the comments. I think that's it, right? So let's just get into it. So it's 30 minutes for free, and then I'll do another 30 minutes for our Vault members. First question, Sticky Blue Toffee. Hi Matthew, what do you think about Games Workshop's increase in releases lately, both physical products, example all the 40k stuff and the anticipated Age of Sigmar stuff hinted to follow the new General's Handbook, and online gaming tools like FAQs? Are they on the ball at the pace or releasing too much? That's a tough question to answer. It's it seems a little overwhelming, but they just came out with a new edition, so I think the increased pace is because they need to get all the codexes done. Because now everybody doesn't have a codex, except for the few that have come out so far. I know we have the indexes, but even when you, like, and they're fun to play. The way the game is right now, it's a lot of fun to play, but they're missing a lot of the depth of the armies that you see with the new codex-based marines and Grey Knights and chaos-based marines that have added all those stratagems and tactical objectives and warlord traits and psychic powers and chapter tactics, like just tons of stuff that's been added to them, that even though the units didn't change much, just that added kind of army composition stuff really makes a big difference. And so I think that there... I remember when War Machine got updated to Mark II, I want to say, that it invalidated all the previous books as well. And within the first year, they released a ton of books to get everybody's army out because they didn't even have rules for your armies. That's not true. You could buy all the new card sets. So it was kind of like the index, and then they updated them as well after that. And so they had to kind of rapidly release as well. And I think that's a necessary thing that they're doing right now. And it's overwhelming, especially for us as content producers, to try to keep up on top of everything and with all the release schedule. But it is also exciting. And so I think overall it's a good thing. It's going to be hard for tournament players to keep up with the meta because it's constantly changing, which is also a good thing. It keeps things fresh. So I think if it is negative at all, I think it's much more positive than it is negative. How does this affect Mini Wargaming trying to keep up while putting out diverse, high-quality content? Does the intense coverage you put into things like the new 40K mean that other video series like Age of Sigmar and Shadow War suffer from lack of time or lack of views? It definitely does affect us. We've had to adjust our way of thinking of how far ahead of ourselves we get. Over the summer, we tend to get more guests, and then all of a sudden, we had a ton of Chaos Space Marine battle reports. And then the Chaos Space Marine Codex is getting released. But we have, I think we had 12 Chaos Space Marine battle reports that were filmed with the Index. And they hadn't been released yet. And the Chaos Space Marine Codex is coming out. So we had to basically just put those all out in a week, which is a bit of a waste of labor. You're not going to get the same number of Vault signups and views when you just dump out that many battle reports in a row that are all Chaos Space Marines. Maybe if there's that many battle reports, but they're covering different armies or different games or whatever, then maybe. But not one army being played 12 times. That's probably beyond that point. You get those diminishing returns, and that's even beyond the point of diminishing returns. And so there's a bit of lost labor that could have been put into other games, for example, if we had known that. Well, and we had rumors, of course. We just didn't know that it was going to be this rapid. But and it's not even that too. It's just a matter of, we had a lot of guests coming in, and a lot of them happened to play Chaos Space Marine. It's forced us to really have to get even more organized with the content we're producing and not get too far ahead. Normally, I like to get a few weeks ahead with our content, and that way, if we need to take a week off to do something else, or if people get sick or whatever, it's not a big deal. But right now, we can't really do that with 40K. We can't get more than a couple weeks ahead because a new release will come out. But we've got a bunch of battle reports that don't showcase that new release, but they're not out of date because there's some other armies. So we push them back in the schedule, and then we make new battle reports for the new armies. But then that means that those ones that we played are even that much out of date, more out of date because of how fast they've been coming out with FAQs. If something might change in those other armies, even if one of the codexes didn't come out. And so it is tough. It is tough to keep on top of that. On top of that, we're still really getting used to all the 8th edition rules. And so the earlier the game was filmed, the more likely there are to be rules errors. And so if we push it back behind other battle reports that we film after, then we may have corrected those rules errors, and then we're doing old rules errors in those later games. So it is hard to maintain the quality as we're trying to keep pace with everything. Like in a perfect scenario, it's not even really a perfect scenario. If we had so many content producers that we wouldn't need guests, then we could just film what we need as we need it, and it goes out with like the next week, and that way we're always current. But guests are such a fundamental part of our business that allow us to film so much more content and more diverse content. I can't imagine that ever being not a thing with Mini Wargaming. So it's just a challenge that we have to work on. Do the other ones suffer? We've been keeping on top of Age of Sigmar, and even with the new General's Handbook, Shadow War, Armageddon. Well, Steve Quirk and I, for the past 3 weeks, have been filming the Death Watch campaign. We're actually almost done filming it. As of the video you're watching today, we're filming one of the finals, and then the next on Monday, we'll be hopefully filming the last video of the series. Then I got a bunch of other work to do. Rob's got lots of post-production stuff to do. It's going to be coming out September 27th. But we've managed to fit that in. 4 days of filming last week, 4 days of filming this week, and a day of filming next week, plus all the ones before that. That means the three of us have been pretty occupied and haven't been able to do much of anything else. But we're still keeping on top of our 40K Age of Sigmar and fantasy content. So I think now that we have the manpower that we do, once we're fully organized, and we're getting better and better at that. It's funny because there's always a lag between when we decide to get more organized and when it actually happens, because we've already booked a lot of guests. We book like months in advance. So if we're like, oh shoot, we have too many people coming in to play 40K, it's like, so slow down how many we have. Well, for the next 3 months, we'll already have too many. We're not going to call them up and cancel them because people have already booked plane tickets and they're looking forward to this. And so there's always this lag between when we decide to change how we're organized to when it actually happens. And so that's kind of happening right now. We're adjusting how many guests that need to come in for different things so that we have more time to film other stuff too. And because we want to start filming other games or more narrative campaigns or more special stuff as well, while keeping on top of reviews and battle reports of the current stuff as well. It's quite the challenge, as you can imagine. It's impossible for us to do 100%, but we're doing our best. Keep up the amazing work and content. Thank you, Sticky Blue Toffee. M. Tempest. Or is it Mount Empest? Hi, Matt. Please, could you go and show us Lee's sheer happiness? Dunno, he might even do a happy dance with a new Necromunda announcement. Thank you. He's not here right now. I actually don't know how excited he is for the new Necromunda. We talked about it. I think he's excited for it because he still has his old Necromunda gang. He played that game. I know he enjoyed playing Armageddon and Blood Bowl, like things like that. So I think he will be excited for that. But sorry, I don't think he's here to do a happy dance for you. Sam602, sorry up front if this seems long. So an interesting thing has occurred recently regarding my homebrew All Primaris chapter, The Star Commanders, theme based off of the early 2000s cartoon Buzz Lightyear of Star Command. That's awesome. I've actually had two people refuse to play my army based on the theme. Really? My army theme was also mentioned in a podcast, although they claim it was not my army specifically, but the theme in general. One of the commentators says he hates themed armies like that because it breaks the fourth wall and takes him out of the universe. Well, isn't he just a big ball of joy? I've also received plenty of negative reaction when I share some of my work on my army, but it's the internet and that's expected. Also, not everyone has to love what I do, and the positives outweigh the negatives by a landslide. Yeah, of course. There's going to be some people who will be like that. So curious what your thoughts on the fourth wall, and if you would ever refuse to play or let someone play at Mini Wargaming based on their army's theme, as long as it was not offensive, of course. No, we definitely would not. In fact, I'd encourage it. We just had a guy play yesterday against Dave, and he brought in an orc army that was like super cool converted. Dave posted pictures on our Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/miniwargaming. It'll be one of the recent posts. And it's really cool. Like he has like a Necron Destroyer, and there's an orc riding it, and he's holding like this circuit panel that's wired into the brain of the destroyer. And so he's like, that's how he's controlling it. You got other like Grots riding Wraithguard. You've got this one guy who's got like a Dark Eldar Venom, but then with like a Sisters of Battle, I think it's a Sisters of Battle turret on top. And then there's an orc in there riding it. But there's wheels. There's all sorts of cool stuff like that. It was really neat, like super cool. I don't even know what he would count half of that as, but I'd love to play against that. I absolutely love converted armies. If they have a goofy theme, like Star Commanders, like Buzz Lightyear, that would be so much fun. I wouldn't use it in a narrative campaign, of course, but I don't see why anybody would look at that and be like, oh, I don't want to play against that. Because that's cool stuff. So obviously some Killjoys there. I definitely tried my best to blend the two universes together. Certainly not themed like Hello Kitty, My Little Pony, or Smurfs, etc. Even that would be cool. I saw a Smurfs army that was actual Smurfs that were supposed to be Ultramarines, and that was super cool. Like their drop pods were big mushrooms, and it was neat. Love all the content. Hope to come up to play sometime, maybe when the bunker is ready, and as long as you allow my army despite the theme. LOL. Definitely. Daniel TMU. Matt, question premise. Obviously the Tyranids, and by extension the Gene Stealers, are just as happy to consume beings of any faction, not just humans. Therefore, I imagine that there is a potential for a Gene Stealer cult to infest the Tau world. Not just a potential, it's actually happened. Many times, actually. The Cain, Caiaphas Cain, one of the novels, has the Gene Stealer cult on a Tau world as well. And there's even some Tau that get infested by the Gene Stealer cult as well. They can totally do that. So question one, if you were to come up with a concept for a Gene Stealer cult that had infested a Tau world for a narrative campaign, what changes would you make to the units, equipment, and vehicles to reflect there being a Tau civilization instead of a human one? That's an interesting question because the Gene Stealer cult models that we have right now are based on humans, but they're just based on miners. And so really, Gene Stealer cults can take any form. And so even within humans, you can come up with a lot of different concepts. The miners concept is a really cool one, and I'm more than happy that Games Workshop decided to go along that theme for them. But it's kind of like the Imperial Guard, that they have Cadians mainly, and Catachan kind of, that there's actually millions of different Imperial Guard regiments out there that are not Cadians and not Catachan, and yet we only have models for Cadians and Catachans because, well, they can only make so many models of humans that people are going to want to buy. And so, of course, they make a good story for why there's so many Cadians in the universe or galaxy all over the place. But really, there's going to be more not Cadians than Cadians in the Imperial Guard throughout the galaxy. So really, you could look at the same thing like that. Like, how many different ways could you make the Imperial Guard look? And like in the past, they've had like the Voistrans and the Death Creek. They have all these different ones that some of them still exist, but a lot of them are discontinued. And that was kind of their attempt to be like, yeah, the Imperial Guard these got these Russian themed ones, and we got these like World War II themed ones, and we got these other themed ones. And unfortunately, you know, it's tough for them to sell models like that because it only sells to the Imperial Guard market, and then it kind of subdivides their products, so they sell less of each of the products. So I can get why they have a hard time doing that. So you can go to third-party stuff, aftermarket stuff, to get a lot more of those varieties of Imperial Guard, because they're just human, so it's really easy to find that. So Gene Stealer cult kind of fall along that same line. Miners is just one of literally a billion choices that Games Workshop could have made to make the Gene Stealer cult interesting, because it tells a story that there's a planet that they were miners and that they rise up. And of course, you can use those for any of your Gene Stealer cult from anywhere in the galaxy. And so you could come up with lots of different themes. They could be gangsters. That was the original ones, right? With the limousines and all that. You can have just like, you have some sort of hive city where they're gangsters, just like the Necromunda gang. So you could have a Gene Stealer cult gang. You could actually have them be more elite and posh. I think of Fallout New Vegas, where you go into New Vegas and there's all the different factions. I don't remember, like the White Glove Society that turned out to be cannibals. Like, so there could be like a Gene Stealer cult that's all White Glove Society. There's just so much you could do with it that miners is just one of many. So then you switch over to Tau, and the same thing would happen. There's like a lot of different things you can do. The first question you'd have to answer is, what has the Gene Stealer cult infested? What is the world about? You'd have to find kind of a background of that world, and then kind of go from there. So I'm having a hard time coming up with something specific. I think it would probably run along the lines of, because the Tau lore is a lot different than human lore, but at the same time, there's a lot of similarities. But they're kind of better. They're more peaceful and all that. So they'd have to be a lot more subterfuge. It can probably go still industrial kind of thing, where they just infest the everyday worker. But you could even go as far to look at like Earthcast and whether they're like taking over the Firecast guys or the Earthcast guys or Aircast, and or the everyday population kind of thing. and just see there. So I'm not 100% sure what I would do. I'd have to put some thought into that. I have a hard time coming up with stuff on the spot. I'm not that creative. Instead, what I do is I do research and I get inspirations from different areas, and then something will strike me, and that's what I'll use. But it would be a cool concept. And then your second question, would you get special models done for the scenario like you got those Nurgle Tyranids? That's always a question. I always want special models for all my scenarios, for all of my campaigns. There's always a limit of budget and time, which are both, you know, time and money, basically. I have to budget both of those. I'd love to. And if the entire campaign was based off of them, well, when we did the Tyrus incident, basically the Genestealer cult on the Space Marine world, well, it was a mining world as well. I made it a mining world specifically because the Genestealer cult had that look to them. But we also had a bunch of Victoria miniatures painted up, the guys that look like a bunch of Australians. And we use those as like the general population because they look like convicts because they have like chains and stuff coming off of them. Not because they're Australians. Yeah, Australian because of the hat, not because of the chains. So, whatever. Anyways. So yeah, we did some custom models for that. So yeah, I could see doing custom models. Definitely would want to do custom models. If they were, especially if they're the focus, I'd want to do custom models for it. Woodrow Wimpy, dear Matthew, when is the Astra Militarum faction focus due to be released? Sometime in the next 10 to 15 years. I'm sure we'll do some. We're done with the faction focuses. I know people, I'm not sure if you're joking there or if you actually want it. I'm sure you want it, but we're done doing the faction focuses. We were just doing a bunch of them. Our intent was never to do all of them. It was just to kind of focus on a bunch that we wanted to. So we're not going to be doing the Astra Militarum anytime soon. Beaker 10, have you considered a historical game such as Bolt Action for battle reports? I know that you have some historical fans in your staff, and a 28mm game would look great for an exciting battle report. Yes, actually. Right now, Josh and Steve individually are working on some. Josh is working on Team Yankee, and Steve is working on Hail Caesar. Is that right, Steve?
They haven't got back to me.
Okay, they haven't got back to you yet, but that's something you'd like to do.
Yeah.
Hail Caesar. That's Warlord Games.
Two other games did get back to me.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, so we're starting to put our feelers out there to start covering other games. That's what I want to do. I don't want to just cover Games Workshop games. I love Games Workshop, mostly. I love their games, mostly. But, 40K is the biggest game out there, so we will always be covering that. Age of Sigmar is a huge game out there, so we'll always be covering that. Warhammer Fantasy somehow clings on, so we'll continue covering that until it totally dies out, which I don't know when that's going to be. So we have to. That's our bread and butter. But I'd really like to expand and start covering other games. And I think we're starting to get to that point where we have the manpower to do it. But we're just going to have to do it carefully because we still need to monetize the content that we do. And not just from ad revenue, but from vault sign-ups and things like that, too. Otherwise, we just don't have the money to do it, and it doesn't make sense to do it. We are a business, after all. Not a charitable organization. Got to make money. And yeah. So yes. Bildrat, Matt, poor Cullen, why is his Necromunda gang so awful? Do you think Dave's hatred of Tau resulted in rules bias, or is it actually possible that Cullen is even worse at rolling than Quirk? Oh, you're talking about the Armageddon campaign. Hold on, let me pour back into my memory from months ago when we actually filmed that, because we filmed it all in a huge batch. Yeah, Cullen had a hard time. And I made the rules, though, so Dave's hatred of Tau did not filter over there. I think actually the kill team's fine. Cullen just got unlucky. Like, in his first game, didn't he lose his leader? I think that happened. Or maybe that was Luca with his ad mech. I just remember some bad stuff happening to him right away, whereas I went through the whole campaign and never lost a single guy. Right? Or did one or two die? But it was like weirdly unscathed throughout the whole campaign. And so, yeah, whereas he lost guys like right off the bat. So, anyway. I don't think he rolls a disproportionate number of ones, but he seems to be more adept at failing important rolls when it counts. Have you considered loaning him some Genestealer cultists out of pity? Well, that campaign is totally done. It's all predetermined now. I'm not going to tell you the ending, of course. Not that it matters, because it's still fun to watch. But, yeah, he just had a hard time. That's what it comes down to. Negrom29, Matt, one among the silent majority here with a question. Do you ever find adjusting or changing the rules to a game, such as with Armageddon, doesn't accurately showcase the game? I find myself really excited to watch you play a new game, only to be dismayed to find you're not really playing that game. I don't mind minor house rulings when it comes to various things that may come up, but my question is more directed at complete changes to the mechanics of the game. Yes and no. I've definitely overchanged in the past, and other times we've changed things that need to be changed, because We are doing what you should be doing to the games at home. You adapt them to your own needs. For example, when we played Gorkamorka, that one campaign, the Yeah, when we played Gorka Borka. I changed the rules a lot looking at them because I was new to looking at those old specialist games. So in my mind, the old specialist games were out of date and they needed to be updated. And so I was trying to update them in the 7th edition. And the more we played, the more I realized they didn't need to be updated. So if we were to play Gorka Morka again, there would be very few, if any, changes to the rules. If there are any changes, it would be more to expand on it rather than to try to fix it. Armageddon, when it came out, I saw it as I saw the serious flaw that it had with the Promethean caches in certain armies. It didn't end up being a problem, so even that rule that I changed, nobody ended up using it. Other than that, I don't think we really changed any of the rules. But there are a couple things in Armageddon where there is no answer to the question, and you have to then make a ruling and, I guess, in a sense, change the rule there. But Armageddon, I think when we played that, we mostly kept it intact. I think the only major thing was the, how it, that you could cash up.
No, you changed my orcs.
How did I change your orcs?
You gave initiative 3.
No, not our Armageddon campaign. Like, not, I mean the very, very first one.
Oh.
No, the Necromunda Armageddon campaign, I have no qualms with changing as much as I did. Because that was the point. The point was to make these custom factions and to merge the new Armageddon rules with the old Necromunda campaign system. But you couldn't just take the Necromunda campaign system the way it was because it was built for gangs and it just didn't make sense for Tau or Admech or for Genes to the Occult. Oh, Genes to the Occult actually was fine. No, the original Armageddon campaign that we did, the only major change I made was the whole cash thing, being able to bank them and to spend enough so that a player like Quirk's Grey Knights, where his regular guys, like he basically would never be able to buy a specialist after that. But in the end, he didn't end up needing to do that because he always rolled those extra advantages of getting more to spend and things like that. So we didn't even end up using that rule change throughout the entire campaign. So that was the only major one. Anything else that we changed was just to fix a hole in the rules where there literally was no answer to it. But yeah, that one remained untouched mostly. The Necromunda Armageddon campaign, no qualms there of everything I did. And I actually used the Inquisimunda rules, which is a fan-made rule set, which is actually really solid, to make those gangs the way I did. Were they balanced? Heck no. I didn't care. That wasn't the point. We're just having fun. Dice will unbalance everything anyways, so it was a lot of fun. So that one, no. The original Gorka Morka, I wish I had just played the original rules, like just untouched. Wish I would have. When I read through them, my math hammering my head was like, this doesn't work. Well, the one exception, I would have still changed the income system because the income system doesn't give you enough if you're only playing like a dozen games. The income system definitely would work if you're playing with your friends and you're just going to like crack out tons of games every evening. Like we're going to meet together. You could play 5 or 6 games. And so their income system only giving you a little bit at a time makes more sense. Whereas when we're playing and we're only going to get, like each person's only going to get 8 to 12 games done, you're going to see very little progression in the Gorka Morka mobs. And so I just had it, I would have kept the way I did the income, or at least would have modified the tables to give a little bit more. But other than that, no, I would play the original Gorka Morka rules. So yeah, sometimes it's been a trial and error with me, like messing with the rules. Like this new Death Watch campaign, I totally created rules for all 10 guys, but I didn't really change anything in 8th edition, but I just made a Orc Codex supplement. So, but I can see what you mean, that you want to see the originals and nothing changed, which, you know, I've been leaning more and more towards as we play newer games and try them out, at least for the first time. But sometimes you just come across things that in our setting, with the way we're playing, just won't work very well and it won't create a good series of missions. So, but it's a fine line to predict those things and to get it right. Sometimes I get it right, sometimes I get it wrong. So, just do our best. Here we are. Eric R. Hi, Matt. I want to start to play Tyranids, but what's with the start collecting box? I thought a typical Tyranid army was weaves and weaves of Hormigaunts, not gargoyles. Would you recommend the start collection box or wait till a new swarm box comes? Thanks a lot, Vault Member for Life. I have no idea what's in the start collecting box. Gargoyles are good, though. Gargoyles are great. It's probably a cheaper... Do they give discounts in the start collecting boxes? I think it's cheaper than buying all the models separately. So... yeah, if you're starting a Tyranid army, you're going to want your Gaunts, your Termagaunts, and your Hormigaunts, and your Tyranid warriors. That's going to be your mainstay. You can also focus on Gene Stealers and stuff too. But yeah, you're going to want Termagaunts, Hormigaunts, and warriors, and then your HQ. You have lots of options there. There's really, I can't tell you like this perfect starter Tyranid army, but you can't go wrong with having warriors and gaunts as your very, very starting things. Because then you can just convert one of the warriors to a prime, and there's your HQ choice, and you're good to go. And then you can kind of go wherever you want from there. In 7th edition, I would have given much more specific direction, but with the 8th edition Tyranids the way they are right now, honestly, almost everything is viable. As long as you make a battle-forged army, so look at HQs, troops, and then start to fill out all the rest. But you can do whatever you want, and it's actually quite viable. You want to make an all-Carnifex army? Old One Eye is the HQ, and Carnifex is the heavy support, and then you bring the Onslaught detachment, you can totally do that. And it would actually be half decent. Well, it won't be the most powerful list in the world, but it can be a list. You want to make an all Gene Stealer list? Great, then do that, because the Broodlord is now an HQ choice, which is awesome, because now you can just do Gene Stealers. It's just Broodlords and Gene Stealers. And if you want to like make it a Vanguard, throw in some Lictors as well. You want to make a Psyker heavy army, then obviously you're in your HQ slots, you got your Hive Tyrant or Swarm Lord, even the Turvagon a little bit too, the level one, I'm just doing one power. And then you got Zone Thropes that can really mass up the number of psychic stuff you can do, and can just mass smite everywhere. Maliceptor's not even that bad anymore. So you have options. You have a lot of options on what you can do. Even Raveners are good. Your Tyranocytes make a lot of drops really good. So especially with Pyrovores, they have long enough range flamers that they can drop in and flame. One of the few armies that can do that. So it's very good. There's a lot of stuff you can do there. Sammy7665, hey Matt, hope you're having a good day. I have a few questions if you don't mind. One, have you forgotten about the Tau since the release of 8th? You seem to really like them at the end of 7th. I haven't forgotten about them. I just haven't had time to play them. So, and I played a few games, and we released those games. Two, have you ever thought about running a D&D campaign or something in the same vein? I noticed that in all the narrative campaigns, you're always the one encouraging the role-playing aspect, and thought that would translate well. Yeah, we've talked about doing role-playing campaigns before, and it's something that we're going to probably delve into a little bit, at least start trying to mix that into the narrative campaigns, but it'll be interesting. You could always look into Wrath and Glory, a new 40k role-playing game under development, as I'm sure it would be fun to watch. It is something I'm thinking of. DK Chubbs, happy birthday, Steve! Big Mikey, Matt, apologies because I'm sure this will be the 5th time this has been asked, but can you explain how the new mini wargaming bunker came to be in the process of deciding how to expand the company this way? Yeah, sure. Basically, Dave did his movie, which he's still working on. It's almost done. It'll be done soon, hopefully. But it's been a lot of work. He's put a lot of hours into editing the Rangers film that he's working on. And one of the people that got involved with it is a guy named Hunter. He's basically one of our viewers. He's watched mini wargaming stuff for I don't know how many years, but he's been one of our viewers for a while. And he actually financially contributed to the film to help make it a thing. So he's one of the executive producers. And he's just an overall awesome guy. And Dave was with him at a film festival for the other movie that they had done. And Dave just mentioned to Hunter this idea that he had, and it's his dream that he's always had. And Dave has talked about this for years. And I love the idea too, although it's never seemed like it's something we can do in the near future because how much money it would cost. And that was to have a bunker of sorts where we'd have places for people to stay. But it's more than that. It's about running events. It's about saying, you know, well, still, you know, you still have guests come in for battle reports, but it's more like, you know, we're going to run this Gorka Morka campaign for a week. And for, you know, X number of dollars, you can come and be in it. And we got a big events hall, and so you play against other players, and then you'll have a chance to film in the studios as well. And so you get to be part of this big event. Oh, and there's a place for you to stay as well, and we can cater as well the food. And there's a store out front. Like, it's just like this destination place. And when he mentioned this to Hunter got really excited and wanted to get on board with it, because we didn't have the money to do it at the time. And so he offered, and then we went through a long process of talking about how it would work. And he's basically partnered with us to do this. And so, so he's heavily involved in the building, obviously. He's actually going to be the owner of the building, and we'll be renting it from him. And he's just providing it to make it all possible. So he's basically partnered with us in order to be able to do this. And so it took a while after that. We had to find the right building, and then we had to look at the building. There's a lot of due diligence that's gone into it. We don't even have possession of the building yet, but there is a final offer on it, all the inspections done and everything. So October 1st, we take possession, and then we start the renovation process, which will take probably 6 to 8 months. and then we'll have it, and it'll be exciting. So, yeah, that's basically it. Hunter's an awesome guy, and he's the one making this all possible, so thank you, Hunter. William Ka. Matthew, it's that time of year again. What is the costumes that you are going to give/force the staff to wear for Halloween? Well, I haven't actually thought about Halloween, man. I'm just trying to get through August. Because I got a Death Watch campaign I'm working on, then I'm going to Nova Open, and then I'm moving. Like, personally, I'm moving, because we bought a new house. And so, that's half an hour. Let me finish this one. And so I have been just, like, super busy and super preoccupied, so I have not even given an ounce of thought to Halloween. Well, that's our half an hour for the free part of the Sit and Talk. You can click the link below to go and watch the Sit and Vault for our Vault members. If you're not a Vault member, try it out. You can try it out for free for 7 days. Click the link. It'll bring you to a page. Sign up for free. 7 days. Get access to the Sit and Vault and everything else in the Vault. It's not a limited trial. You get access to everything. So you can binge watch campaigns that you wanted to watch, whatever you need to do, for free for 7 days. We hope you stick around after that, but it's totally up to you. Just want to get that hook in there. Get you to try it out. So go ahead, click the link below. I'll see you in the next video.